try to see the new reality and find new way of handling this according to this new reality.
I'm Deepak Chopra. You're watching New Realities.
My name is Alan Steinfeld, and my program is called New Realities. Each week, I go deep into the understanding of how we can start to change the planet, how new ideas can be presented to the world to unfold a greater civilization. Welcome to New Realities. I'm Alan Steinfeld, and I'm very happy to have on this show today someone who's involved in the activation of consciousness around the planet, because this program is dedicated to our evolution. And there's nothing I feel is more evolutionary than tapping into the other realms and bringing down the angelic presences. So that is why I'm so happy today to have Stuart Pearce joining me in the studio. Thank you, Stuart.
Well, it's an immense honor to be here, really. Immense honor.
It's also an honor for me because your work with the angelic realms. Let's talk about, how did you even know there was something like angels?
Well, you know, as a child, I was completely enchanted by wonder. So I spent most of my time out of my body. I didn't speak for the first 6 years of my life. So I have a brother who's sort of 18 months older who spoke for me. But when I started speaking, I began to really relate in the linguistic of a 6 or 7 year old child what I was actually seeing. So I saw the multidimensional universe, and particularly saw waves of energy and these extraordinary orbs of light, which have now become, as an adult, you know, all these 60 years later, have become these extraordinary beings that are now working with me. But they came to me in a very formal way as an adult. But as a child, I was constantly seeing the multidimensional
universe.
Did
you walk around just spaced out, like, you know, like what?
Completely spaced out, yeah. I mean, that's why I didn't talk. So there are photographs or home movies of me doing this.
And what are you seeing in those?
In other words, I think what I was doing is, what on earth is this thing? Or what in heaven is this thing? This body that I'm in, and had, you know, profound learning challenges. So I didn't read before the age of 14, 15.
So you'd see these orbs of light, these spheres of light, and would they talk to you?
Oh, totally, yeah.
And what would they say?
What they would say, it was much more to do with a knowing, a feeling about the fact that they were beings of infinite light, of infinite love, that were communicating a consistent vibration of abundance and joy and delight and well-being.
Did you think everyone saw them?
Or of course, yeah.
When did you find out?
Well, I started talking. 7, 8, 9, I started talking about what I was seeing, and people were just aghast. And also, I need to mention the fact that I was brought up in a slightly unusual situation, because my dad worked for the British royal family. And so we were, ostensibly, we were brought up in royal palaces, although my mother was a very earthed human being. And so she made sure that we went to state education, you know, that we were educated with other children, not in a rarefied elitist container, so that we could become very balanced. Now, the point that I'm making is that if you're brought up in these places, they're rich in voices, they're rich in history. So one where I seem to remember we spent the first 6 or 7 years is St. James's Palace. And I mean, that has been there since the 15th century. So you can imagine I was having an absolute ball talking to all these beings.
Because they're there in these old places
Absolutely. You know, particularly when you're dealing with heritage and tradition in the way that you are in Europe. I mean, our heritage and tradition in the United States, of course, is relatively young, as
it
we
is.
Know. But in Europe, it's so old.
Wow. And so these beings, were they teachers for you?
Did
they start to train you as an oracle, in a sense? Because
it was much more to do with the experience of life, because they interpreted that I was frightened most of the time. And so,
not,
you know,
by them, but by the people in the room.
Oh, I wasn't frightened by them. I mean, people often said to me, oh my God, you saw all of this stuff, you must have been terrified. I was never terrified.
You were terrified
of
the people.
I was absolutely in wonder. But in human terms, in material form, because I couldn't do what people wanted me to do. And so what I experienced was gross disapprobation and disapproval, particularly from my dad, who was frightened, literally frightened by this child that he'd bred. who was creative and feminine and was very weird. Get something to do! Because I spent most of the time being. And I remember his constant phrase was, you look like a wandering Jew. And for, you know, for me, Jewish people were wonderful people. And then suddenly I was...
Some of my best friends are wandering.
Exactly.
I'm the one, anyway. Yeah.
So the outside world, the 3D world was really terrifying. And not being able to fit into the consciousness of 3D in the sense of the educational enfolding that took place. Because I couldn't read and I couldn't do math.
Wow.
So I was a very unusual child that was beaten a lot.
Oh, sorry to
it's
hear
fine.
That.
I'm fine now.
I know. Well, when did you start to like bring it all together and become coalesce all this and crystallize and become a teacher of these? Because you're a representative, in a sense, of that realm here on planet Earth. So when did you...
Well, you know, life has been, and life is now 65, so years of age. So it means that there's been a continuous organic development. But of course, there are very particular pockets of experience where chronology suddenly, you know, the Wheel of Fortune suddenly goes clunk and something unique happens. And I remember at the age of 15, suddenly I became aware, I guess I was of an age of social consciousness, as most of us are during early adolescence or where peak pubescence takes place. And I became aware of the realm of the sacred. And it was largely to do with the fact that I attended a school where we celebrated the Anglo-Catholic Mass. So it's still an Anglican church, but we celebrated Mass as it were a Roman Mass, which means that there are all the bells and smells, you know. So I was part of the theater of ritual.
The frankincense and
exactly.
The...
Exactly. And I took part in that, you know.
Yes.
I mean, I had to be a server,
right.
You know, I had to be a thurifer because it was so exciting. Mm-hmm. But what it did was to open up a consciousness in relation to the ritual of sacred liturgy. And so everything for me then became a dedication and a reverence to the divine from a formal point of view. As a child, it was helter-skelter, but then suddenly that slotted in. Mm. And at the same time, people said to me, there's something about your voice. Nobody ever said anything else, but people were saying, there's something about your voice. And this was the first time in 15 years that anybody had given me any approval. So I thought, oh, there's something about my voice.
You do have a great voice, and you teach voice to
So I started as an actor. I became an actor. So that leaps forward into my 20s. And I worked as an actor for 10 years.
Mm-hmm. On the English stage.
Yeah. And then I was living here in New York City, so I came here and worked here. And then a great Wheel of Fortune shifted again, where the sacred nature of my mother, who I had a very powerful soul connection with, she passed. And I was about to make a movie here, but instead of making the movie, I went back and nursed my mother, who had terminal cancer. So I nursed her for a year, and then she passed. And that was also a huge wheel, where suddenly the angelic kingdom came in with an extraordinary thrust. And it was to do with a series of mystical experiences that I had post her death when she came to me. And that opened up a huge doorway. Now, the point was that I had an agent and a manager here, and 20th Century Fox were employing me, and I was in breach of contract because I didn't go and make the movie. I went back to nurse her, and they weren't willing to understand the compassionate nature of that leave. And so it's a question of, oh my God, I've lost my agent, I've lost my manager. As an actor, what am I going to do? And that's when I met or re-met the most extraordinary woman, who is the voice director of the Royal Shakespeare Company, who has...
Who's that?
Her name is Cicely Berry, and she's still with us, actually. She is renowned within the English-speaking theater world for training some of the great voices that we hear today. I mean, the Patrick Stewarts and the Ian McKellens and the Judy Dench's and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And Cicely called me and said, what are you doing? And I said, I'm not doing anything, I'm being this. And she said, oh my God, this is, what are you going to do? And I said, I don't know. And she said, well, why didn't you come and teach for me? So I said, but I'm an actor. And she said, no, there's something about your voice. And so I worked as her apprentice and learned what it was to train people's voices. Mm. And then huge doorways suddenly opened. And there I was, the man who gave Thatcher her voice. So I was called in to work with Margaret Thatcher.
You did? What was that like?
Oh, fantastic.
Really?
She was extraordinary.
Was she?
Yeah.
Very powerful, dynamic.
Oh, very extraordinary. But remember, this was at the beginning of her premiership. Uh-huh. And so over, 10 years, 12 years, she grew into what we know as the Iron Lady. Uh-huh. And I worked with her right at the very beginning of her career.
You could tell there was something to her.
Oh, she's extraordinary. She's a genius.
Wow. Mm. Going back to when you were 15 and the sacred liturgy, it's sort of become your work in a sense now. Mm. So when did you get back to that part?
When my mother passed, I really reopened my psyche, meaning that when I saw her in spirit and that she gave me a series of very important teachings about the unfolding of my life, that's when I really switched on. Now, of course, in 3D, I was bewildered by the experience because there were very few people around me that were professional clairvoyants. Mm-hmm. So I trained as a clairvoyant, realized that that wasn't my path. Mm-hmm. However, I used my psyche and people started coming.
As
clients, people came for readings and people came for healings and said, there's something about your voice that heals me. And then in 1987, during the harmonic convergence, a friend of mine had a store in a wonderful town called Glastonbury.
Oh, I know Glastonbury. It's sort of like the
heart chakra of the world.
And the spiritual center in England.
Absolutely.
And
yes, well, one of the major spiritual centers. I mean, there are others, but it is a huge epicenter.
Yes, it is. So
I went down to read for him and felt exhausted during my lunch break. So all of my great meditation teachers said, go and meditate. So I went and meditated on the hill of what we know as the Tor.
Oh, that's a powerful, I love that place. I think it's an artificial creation. It feels like it's made of vibration, that
I agree.
So you were on the Tor.
So I was on the Tor
on harmonic convergence.
In August for the harmonic convergence.
With 1,000
other people. So I was meditating just to recover energy. I mean, this was pure innocence.
Were there lots of other people there?
Oh, I was thousands and thousands. I mean, the world and his wife had arrived. And I heard these extraordinary sounds. I mean, really extraordinary.
That was your opening.
Sound was my opening.
And what did you hear?
Harmonics that were just extraordinary. High, overtonal harmonics.
Wow.
I mean, really otherworldly. Uh-huh. I have tried to reproduce them with my range because what I've discovered is that the angels have helped me to create a very, very large range in the way that, for example, we hear Tom Kenyon sing.
Uh-huh, I love Tom Kenyon.
You know, he has a 4.5 octave range or something like that. And I have a 3.5 to 4 octave range. So I've tried to recreate them, but these were otherworldly.
Right.
And so I was bewildered and opened my eyes really fast. And in front of me, I saw these huge orbs of these different colors.
Wow.
And these orbs spoke to me through knowing. Mm-hmm. We are the angels of Atlantis, as it were, and we're going to give you a temple of sound healing that you will call the alchemy of voice.
Wow.
And a huge energy passed through my body and, as it were, seared my heart. So my heart opened in an extraordinary way. And then for 3 years, I listened to them in meditation, and they helped me prepare this as a vessel.
What did you have to do to prepare your body to hold that energy?
Well, it was a question of releasing the anxieties that I experienced because I had supreme hypersensitivity, and so it manifested in all sorts of.
And you shut down because you were so sensitive because of the people around. All of us are very.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, the pathway is that I feel like archetypically I'm a priest warrior. So, you know, if you're introduced to warriorness, then you tend to bring in a great deal of negativity. So that meant that as a child, I was always being bullied. And then as I grew, I was always being mugged. I mean, I was mugged, I don't know how many times. All of these teeth are not my teeth, you know. Uh-huh. So I learned what it was to close down and to play small. And what the angels did was to allow me to believe that love is all there is. Mm-hmm. And that if I didn't love self, that how could I begin to proffer? How could I begin to be the abundant something that I'd always dreamed I was? Mm-hmm. It's just that the rest of the world said that I was no thing. So I began.
So you began, but it's hard. You had to heal all those wounds.
Yeah, and many of us do.
And
don't
you
we?
Did that by loving yourself.
Well, I mean, of course, you know, they introduced me to extraordinary teachers that would come coincidentally, which of course we know it doesn't exist.
Right.
But synchronistically, I would meet extraordinary people around the world. So for 3 years, I worked with a Native American shaman in New Mexico. I went through Jungian analysis, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and worked with an extraordinary medium in London who allowed me to see a way of becoming what I'd always dreamed I could become. And so I gradually healed and healed and healed. And in healing, of course, their vibration, the angel's vibration, got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger.
Wow. Wow. you have cards called the Angels of Atlantis. That's a new term. I've heard of Atlantis, heard of angels, but the Angels of Atlantis, what does that mean?
The angels comprise of 12 in number. Of course, there are the four principal that we refer to as being archangels. Right. I try to re-perceive the entire context. Because after all, the hierarchical values that we place on the angelic kingdoms are actually a human construct, not an angelic construct.
Right, but that's how we interpret it.
That's how we interpret it. So angels.
Angels, okay.
And there are four, Michael, Gabriel, Raphael, and Uriel that we know. But then there are these unusual angels around them, such as Raziel, the angel of the mysteries, and Shamayel, and Metatron, of course, we know. Jophiel, Haniel,
These are the angels that came to you.
These are the 12. And the reason why they refer to themselves as being the angels of Atlantis is that in Kabbalah, they're known as the Malakim. And the Malakim are the angels that overlight the 12 Melchizedek. The 12 Melchizedek are the priest kings or the priestess king queens, who are the White Brotherhood or the Intergalactic Council. So these angels literally hover over these extraordinary beings. Jeshua is there, Mary is there.
So they're ultra-terrestrials beyond the angelic realms in a way. They're guardians of those Melchizedekian.
So they overshadow, because that suggests darkness, but they overlight these beings. And therefore they're, if you like, sonic and light form transmitters of the intelligence of this extraordinary group of beings who are 12 in number.
And they have special messages for you, each one, and
to understand their identity was really quite acute in the initial stages, because obviously, as soon as I began to be used to their presence, I asked lots of questions.
And what did they say?
The big question, why, has always been a major.
Why
me? Yes, am I delusional? No, more to do with why Atlantis? Why are you coming at this time?
Why Atlantis?
What can you teach me? And one of the questions that I asked was, can you tell me the names of the high priests and priestesses of Atlantis? And they said, we will not tell you this. So that was the first time that a no came through. And so I said, well, can you tell me what they became? We will tell you this.
What did they
become? So I said, well, why can't I know their names?
I think you were one of the high priests of Atlantis.
A lot of people say that, but that's not for me to say, is it?
Okay, so...
And so the point that they were making is that if their names were released in these early stages before 2012, because the crystalline grid of the planet still needed to be healed, that if their names were released, their vibration would be released. And it was important that we went through a trajectory of healing the crystalline grid, so that then they could emerge as fresh beings in people's consciousness. But they showed me what they became in the sense of the fact that when Atlantis was not destroyed, but when it submerged to the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean, that these extraordinary beings knew exactly what were happening. So, of course, they colonized different areas of the world, which was then reconstituted, geographically speaking. They became, for example, the 12 principal gods and goddesses in Egypt, because obviously Egypt was a colonization of Atlantis. Well, not obviously, but it was.
No, it is obvious.
They taught me.
Yes, yes. No, it's obvious.
And so Thoth was there. Thoth was an earlier incarnation of Saint-Germain. And then they became the gods and goddesses of Greece, and then the gods and goddesses of Rome. And then they reappeared in the consciousness of Carl Jung, who was an Atlantean priest wizard.
Do they appear as the Zodiac, too, the signs of the Zodiac?
They do live around the Zodiac, yes, in the sense that they station themselves around
the 12 tribes of Israel.
And the 12 tribes of Israel.
12 months of the year.
So we ask, well, why 12? You know, and it's a ring path knot that opens up. A ring path knot.
What does that mean?
So it's a vibration of energy that allows us to see that we're moving and maturing from the vibration of 7, which is the planetary resonance frequency, into the universal resonance frequency, to recognize that we're universal beings that live on planet Earth.
Because of the 12, the vibration of the 12,
the
12 dimensional realities
that
we're constantly kind of tuning into. So these names, if we hear them, will they create a sort of resonance to that connection that we'll call on these beings that can help us in certain areas of our lives?
The point that I want to really drop in is that their names are sonic glyphs that represent a key into human consciousness.
So as we say the names, the sonic glyphs,
yes,
the meaning
so,
what?
Well, meaning that the name is a sonic vehicle, is a formation of energy that we may see because we read Gabriel or Jophiel or Haniel or Metatron or Michael. We see those. We fixate on the printed word. But actually, if we listen to the word is a compilation of sound processes that actually release a vibration.
Well, let's do some of that. Let's release some vibrations. No, I mean, I'd be love to share with these viewers that kind of sonic resonance to see for myself as there's a shift in frequency.
Yeah. So the way that they do it is not just by producing these names that alter the space. The way that they, because they want to serve humanity in a very specific way. Mm-hmm. And the only way that they can serve humanity is really by metering through us very particular frequencies. Mm-hmm. And the way that they do it so that we literally become access points, like listening posts in a universe or cosmos of sound, is through our own note.
Okay, our own note,
yes.
Our own voice note.
Yeah.
So how do we do that?
So we each have a note.
Tell me my note.
Well, do you want to find your note?
Well, sure.
Okay.
I never knew I had a note, but I'd love to find it. Now, tell me my note.
Okay,
because this is how you work with people. I'm not just asking for me. I'm trying to tell people your work.
So, indeed, yeah. And, of course, yes. I'm really grateful to you.
No, just tell me.
But I sort of know where we're going.
Okay, tell me.
Because I've done this so many times. So, finding our note is an immensely sensitive thing because it's your inner being. Uh-huh. And so I honor that.
Because,
I don't just invade people.
Well, let me just tell you, because we are missing our note in this world out here. And when we find our note, we are then not so much in that world. We're in a different...
Yeah, exactly.
It shifts us.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. So if you imagine, I'll illustrate through my own voice, then we'll relate it to your voice.
Okay.
If you imagine that the whole of my range is sitting here on a horizontal frequency, like a keyboard, we know that the most important thing about a keyboard is that it has a middle, which we call a middle C, which divides the treble from the bass. So if I relate that to my voice... If I play with my right hand and my right hand alone, you get a lot of treble.
Sound like a New Yorker.
Yeah, okay. Now, I mean, the interesting thing about this sound is that it is the sound of the cerebral consciousness of today. And if I'm, you know, going into that nasality, which is often heard in this city, which has only really grown over like 50 years, you know what I'm saying? Do you know? Yeah, yeah. Okay, so we produce this sort of energy, but something radical has happened to me in the sense that I'm no longer really the person that I was, okay?
Right, because your voice is different.
Right? If I go right down here like this, if I carry on talking to you like this, you'll probably fall asleep or think I'm psychotic, so I won't talk down here. But if I'm playing with both hands, you can hear a treble, the treble and the bass mixed together. Mm. So suddenly, the whole of my being has changed.
Yes.
So which one would you like to trust? This one up here, or this one down here, or this one?
Yeah, the both together.
Both together, okay.
I'd like both.
I'm so glad.
I don't have a choice, but yeah.
Well, I mean, if I carry on doing this, I look and sound stressed.
You like it?
And what I'm doing is just producing energy here to do with the doing.
I'm more used to that, but no, I'd like to play with both.
So
I'd like to play with a full deck.
If I say, you know, it's Hafiz, I think, so it's very ancient. Hafiz, the great poet, the great
Hafiz.
Spiritual
Hafiz,
yeah. It's pronounced differently in different areas of the
world.
Right. That if, like Rumi, anyway, whatever.
Right.
He wrote, if words arise from the heart, they enter the heart. If words arise from the tongue alone, they don't pass beyond the ears.
Mm.
So how do we meet our power? How do we meet that point of harmony within ourselves so that we're completely centered in the seat of the soul, which is here? So if we're literally, if we imagine that there are lips here or a beam of light coming out of here, you take the horizontal, you make it vertical, and you put it right into your spine, then if you're working through here, you're always working through a point of harmony.
So to speak from this place, instead, because I can easily...
There, yeah.
But to speak from here, here, from here. Wow, that's different. I feel like a different person. Is that my note?
This is you.
Is this me?
Yeah. And in fact, Alan, to be frank, you're using your note all the time.
Uh-huh.
Because you're very awakened to who you are.
But I feel like I'm not always here.
Ah, now that's a different question.
Right.
Because obviously the interesting thing about people say, what do you mean? Is it one note? Is it one note? And the point is that we each have a very particular frequency, which a frequency is a pitch or a note. Mm-hmm. But we know that the note then resonates through our bodies. So the one note becomes many notes.
So have I gotten it then if I'm right here?
If you say, hello, my name is Alan.
Hello,
hi.
My name is Alan. Hello.
This is you.
It feels a little low for me.
It's fuller,
not richer.
Lower, but fuller.
Fuller. It's slower.
It's interesting, slower. Right?
Yeah. It's a little slower.
Yeah.
It's a little more relaxed. I feel like it's a little, putting it on a little, I feel like it's not what I'm used to.
It's not normal.
It's not for
but
me,
it is
yeah.
completely natural to you. Mm. So it's a sound that brings the whole of your physical geometry into balance. And therefore, every organ in your body literally synchronizes into that note.
Wow. You just taught me something there, Stu. But it's also a training. Like, you're practiced in it because you've worked. I have to then remember this is me.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's, you know, what's beautiful, and I'm sure people will see on camera, that the inner you becomes part of the outer experience. Whereas when we're here, we're largely very cerebral. I mean, I'm still in my note, but the sound is right here. Mm-hmm. So it's all outer, and it's all to do with doing. But you don't really know who I am. But if I come back here, you suddenly think, oh, wow, there's a portal into the inner being of this man. This
That's
is really
great.
Interesting.
The portal into the inner being. So what did this have to do? I'm going to speak from here, okay? If I can. What does this have to do with the angels of Atlantis?
Well, the angels are these unique vibrations that love for the sake of love. Mm-hmm. We human beings, it seems, tend to love for the sake of being loved. So we're constantly challenging and demanding the world to love us, whereas angels just vibrate through unconditional love. Mm-hmm. They don't demand love in return. Mm-hmm. And they are here to serve us as we move forward in the field of free choice or free will.
But what does that have to do with dropping into
Okay, so this? I give the entire picture rather than just one splash.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Okay?
Thank
and
you.
So by finding our note, we discover who we truly are, and that if our note is arising from our heart, the seat of the soul, that the heart suddenly becomes aware of the fact that feeling is the language of the soul, not thinking.
Feeling is the language,
is the language
I like
of the soul.
That is good.
And that's what they teach us. But most of us are feeling unintelligent. And so we scamper through life, or we pour through life, or we shift through the hurly-burly of life, and then the shit hits the fan, and we're in a predicament, and we don't know what we're feeling. We know we feel like shit, but we don't really know what shit feels like. We don't have any way of being able to heal, meaning a movement back to wholeness. Whereas if we know our note, we have a way of being able to see what I'm experiencing right now is not the real me, it's part of me, but I'm really frightened. And over there is absolute empowerment and abundance and pure love. And I want to be over there. So what I'm going to do is to alchemically change this negative into positive by using my note. So we become feeling intelligent.
So let me see if I can integrate. So by feeling our note, we start to also, I'll drop it, access the realms of the angelic
absolutely
order as they contribute to the development of the note. It deepens the experience of the self with the help of the angelic presence as we become more of ourselves. And then we are connected to that realm instead of mind and thinking and separate. Those beings, the angels of Atlantis, resonate with us and takes us to deeper sense of feeling, an inner experience of our reality.
Mm. That's beautiful. That's exactly what they do.
Is it? Okay.
It's because we're always in an avalanche of thought.
Mm-hmm.
That's the point that they're pointing out. Now, we know that thought creates reality, so thinking is extraordinarily important. But what we tend to do is to overemphasize, cerebralize everything mechanistically. And this is only something that's happened over 450 years as a result of the birth of the mechanistic view of the universe. Mm. People in medievalism thought completely differently that's from true. The way that we think. No. And that's the area of study in theatre, for example, you know, which is why I was part of the Shakespeare Globe project and master of voice there for 12 years mm-hmm. to help actors really embody all of this field of information, this mind field. Because you see, they all knew what I'm talking about.
They did.
This was not new 400 years ago. In ancient Rome, this was taught as persona. So people acquired persona, and persona in Latin means per through sona sound. So you revealed the entirety of your being through sound, and therefore they worked physiologically to feel their note because they knew that sound was at the core of creation.
Wow, that is new for me. I mean, I'm hearing it, I'm getting it, and that's beautiful. You got something there as a core teaching.
It's interesting, isn't it? Yeah. You know, it's wonderful to be with you because I've always enjoyed you so much. And
even though I was like...
But I mean, I see beyond that, you know. I see the extraordinary sweetness and love that is at the core of your work. And that touches me really deeply. So I revere it, hence me being here.
Thank you, Stuart. Beautiful. Actually, your whole life is about frequency, I would say.
Yeah, it's about frequency, yeah. Yeah, actually, a thought that comes to me is that, you know, I was sharing with you earlier that as a child, I found it very difficult to read until about 14, 15. Mm-hmm. And I learned to read through frequency. I learned to read through the waves of force by singing.
I sang.
My mother said, Stuart's always humming. Let's put him into a church choir. So I was put into a church choir. And of course, I just parroted the other boys because I couldn't read the words. Oh. And then suddenly, on the wave of the breath, to keep the tonality of the hymn or the anthem or the psalm flowing, I suddenly began to move with the wave of the breath because I realized that I'd always seen sound. So I'm a synesthete. I see sound.
You see sound?
I see sound.
So when someone's talking, you're seeing little...
I see color as wave.
You're seeing it right now?
Yeah. I switch on and I switch off.
You do.
Yeah.
You're sort of synesthetic sound person.
Yeah. So it's all about frequency. It's all about wave.
So when you... Yeah. Like you're like a dolphin in a sense. No, because
that is so wonderful. I've been called many things in my life, but never a dolphin. And I've swam with dolphins. I love them. So
they're
I'm like a dolphin. Absolutely. Yeah.
So everybody has a frequency signature.
Yeah. And that's what we just found. And it was really interesting, you see, because you find it so easily, you personally.
I did. Yeah.
So for example, during your introduction, the first thing you do as you look into camera is, hello everybody, my name is Alan Steinfeld, and I am the champion of new realities. I mean, there you are completely in your note.
Oh, that's my note.
That was your note. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
It's very seductive.
Is it?
It's very seductive, very soothing.
That way I can get more viewers.
Of course.
So let's talk about this whole idea of angelic realms, and you talked about angelic activism. Mm. Anyway, just want to say thank you for that recognition here. So they're here, these angels you're in touch with, to really help us be more human in a sense, right?
So, well, to be spiritual beings having a human experience. And many of us just have a human experience. Many of us forget that we have soul or that we actually have this extraordinary heritage of being spiritually wise, of spiritually intelligent, and that we, you know, we have stardust within us, that we're from the heavens. We're not just terrestrial beings. Right. Although this is a very unique experiment, this cosmic experiment that we're living.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that most people are it up.
Oh, what?
Oh,
I see. Right.
Well, look at the world. I mean, it's in chaos.
So your work, though, is to bring the chaos back into coherence.
Into harmony, yeah.
Harmony.
Yeah.
And how do we do that? But as you're directed from that angelic realm, how are you doing that? What's the essence of your work?
Well, it begins with us. Okay. Be the change you want to see through the great words of Gandhi.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about how if we recognize that feeling is the language of the soul, not the competitive nature of cerebralization. That's just about scoring points with other human beings and making other human beings feel belittled often. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there can be a very genuine debate where there is exciting exchange of ideas, but mostly it's about point scoring and demeaning people. But when we move into the heart, when we move into the congress of what it is to feel with the soul, we move into inclusivity and empathy. In the way that, for example, those states are being evoked by a lot of our amazing young people on this planet, and particularly within the field of the music industry. I mean, you hear Pharrell Williams always talking about empathy and inclusivity and not about point scoring with other people. Right. So if we become feeling intelligent, we automatically see ways of being able to know self, to thine own self be true, and also if we reach points of predicament or confusion, that we know what we're feeling and that we know we're not feeling good, so how we can transmute not feeling good into feeling good. Mm-hmm. Because when we're feeling something intense, when we're really suffered, we believe that all there is this, the suffering. But actually, there is always another reality because we're living a vibration of duality at the moment.
How do we tap into that other reality, according to your...
The reality of abundance.
Yes.
Because we see abundance with us all the time, but at the same time, what the angels principally do is to come in and say, but don't you see that the pathway that you've journeyed on has brought about a gross narcissism, where you feel you have to do it all by yourselves. Now, they never criticize, I'm not saying, they glorify all the time. Mm-hmm. But what they indicate is that we are always with you. So, for example, if we start off with our guardian angel, this being of light that comes to us at the moment the inception of the sperm and the ovum spark and soul comes to
us. You get your own guardian angel.
We get our own guardian angel. No name, no sexuality, no gender. A beam of light that is with us all the time, helping us to manifest the soul's trajectory. It's just that we get in the way and disturb it.
How do we know the soul's trajectory?
Well, by listening to our guardian angel.
So if we listen, how do we listen? How do we know? We just get a knowingness?
We need to meditate.
Ah.
And today, we need to meditate at least 3 times a day so that we become absolutely self-aware to the way that we bring the physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual realms together within our bodies. And that's why I'm introducing angelic sound healing, because in sound, we stop the disturbance of in our cerebral dominance.
Right.
Sound brings us into harmony where the physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual energies come back into the frequency of the fifth element, which is our note.
Mm. So you're introducing sound healing as people, angelic sound healing, so they can reach towards the abundance that...
Absolutely, absolutely.
But how do, so talk to me about that. How do we do it? How do we get in there? How do we...
Well, the principal thing, is, as we've already discovered, is to find our note.
Okay, we find our note.
But the interesting thing is that in order to find our note, in order to be... listening posts and an ocean of sound, in order to really open up the sound of our whole being so that we literally meet other sound beings, such as the angels or other spirit guardians. Because sound is at the core of creation, and so sound is an extraordinary powerful energy to connect with, so that fields of intelligence or fields of consciousness are opened from this singularity into a plurality which is multiplicitous.
Wait, let me take that in. Sound is the doorway to other dimensional realities.
Yeah.
If we know how to vibrate the note that we are at the harmonics that connect us into the infinite.
Totally. And we're doing it all the time. It's just, are we doing it consciously or are we doing it unconsciously? And the way that the infinite, the way that the field of the extraterrestrial or the ultra-terrestrial, the way that the field of the angels, all these different kingdoms or fields, the way that we can experience them is not by leaving our bodies, but by coming back into our bodies and knowing that we are spiritual beings on a human journey, by moving into a state of physiological, emotional, mental, and spiritual harmony.
Embodiment is key. Actually, Paul Selig's people talk about that, the guy. I mean, so many people talk about being embodied. Mm. Everyone wants to leave, but we're really here to be, to be here, to inform.
And as we know, it says at the beginning of the fourth gospel, in the beginning was sound, or in the beginning was the word, which literally is the logos. And the logos means the intelligibility of the sound.
The intelligibility, the logic, logos.
It's the word, do you see? But actually the word is a sonic glyph. We're so fixated with the word that we don't hear the sound. Mm. So in the beginning was the sound, and the sound was made flesh and dwelt among us full of grace and truth. So our spiritual beings come into our bodies through sound from light.
Would you say then the spiritual essence of ourselves is the essence of the note that's produced when we find our note? That is the manifestation of the spirit embodied?
Totally.
I just got that. Get that. So,
and all our ancients knew this, by the way. It's just that we're just remembering now. We sort of haven't forgotten, because I say these things and you say, oh, wow, yes, we know it already.
So for people who didn't see the program where we talked about being finding our note, it's just coming into that dropped in.
So we come into this part of our bodies, which if we use the image of the Vitruvian man that Leonardo da Vinci gave us, that we come right into the very center.
And speak from this center, that's our note.
If words arise from the heart, they enter the heart. If words arise from the tongue alone, they don't pass beyond the ears.
Who said that? You said that. I mean, but who else said that? Was that a Shakespearean?
It's a very ancient poet called H-A-F-I-Z.
Oh, Hafiz. Or however you want to say it.
So it's always about moving into the core integrity, isn't it? Of finding the center of our physiology so that spirit can really rest through the whole of our being. This is when we become extraordinary human beings.
So the spirit emanates from the heart, it makes sense, from the center of our...
Well, I believe it's total, to be honest.
It's just that
we, in physical form, because this is so dense, is that we need to find points of center so that we can actually pivot our weight, which is so important to us because it stops us floating around, that we become embodied. And so, obviously, this part of our bodies is our center of gravity. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you know, if we didn't have that, we'd be floating around and feel very insecure or disoriented. But when we come to this, we know that this mechanism here is absolutely crucial.
So how does that connect in with those angels? I asked that
before. This is what the angels teach us. And then they begin to recognize, well, if love is all there is, what in human terms are the degrees of love or the degrees of feeling state that we can become intelligent of, therefore expanding our consciousness as beings of infinite harmony?
So each of the angelic resonance of the angels of Atlantis activate a certain... accent of the note, a certain part of that note.
Yes.
And what will that do for us?
We'll recognize that we're not just one thing, we are many things. Mm-hmm. But at the center, there is a center of extraordinary, I'm using the word yet again, the extraordinary harmony. Mm-hmm. But that when we find our center, we can be many, many different things. We can be a successful interviewer.
Thank you.
Propagating the work that you're propagating. We can become a successful father. We can become a successful son. We can become a successful lover.
What do you mean by successful?
That there is sustained joy.
Okay.
Not woe. So Blake gives us joy and woe are woven fine, a clothing for the soul divine, when this ye rightly know, safely through the world ye go. So we see joy and woe. But at the same time, we know that that's an 18th century perspective and that something unique is happening in our midst at this time where these two forces of joy and woe are becoming one, and it's sustainable joy.
Mm.
It's a heightened state of consciousness that we see in His Holiness the Dalai Lama, that we see in Ammachi, that we see in the great ones, the Bodhisattva.
Mm-hmm.
Through countless lives, they've burned off karma to reach a state of spiritual being in human consciousness where they can be and do extraordinary things, but they resonate pure joy, pure compassion.
So something different is happening at this time with the human experience that has never happened before. Is that what you're
saying? I believe it's happened before, but it's never happened like this.
What is it that this has happened? What is it that's happening in your perception?
Oh my gosh, Alan. Well, what we're doing is we're looking at the end of a paradigm, the established order of being, which has gone on for thousands of years, and we're recognizing that it no longer works with us, that rather than having sovereign, that we're learning our own sovereignty. So we don't need a figure here who is the Lord's anointed. You know, one of the remarkable things about the Queen of England, and I think she's an extraordinary human being, and embodies an iconic state where she is sovereign. So meeting her is an extraordinary experience.
Did you meet her?
Well, I was brought up around her, yeah, because my father worked for her, her household.
And so meeting her, because she seems very sort of, not to offend anyone, a little dull, you know, a little... But what is
I can assure you, if you meet her, you would not find her dull.
Really?
She sparkles.
What is the thing about her?
She has charisma. She is a charismatic.
Is it because of the lineages that have been put?
She's anointed.
That's truly why anointed.
She's part of a lineage. So she's part of a blood lineage, but also a spiritual lineage of the anointed ones. That's why she will not abdicate. She's anointed. So she believes in the anointing. So she may be removed and austere and have an unusual voice because it's not a voice that we hear in common parlance today. But actually, if you meet her, this is a woman where you know her shadow is absolutely transmuted into pure grace, pure love, pure elegance. We have never seen her shadow. We've always seen her grace. So
there was that movie, The Queen, though, that sort of bit of a shadow that...
Well, no, she's a human being, Alan. Yes. So she's ordinary as well as being extraordinary. Mm-hmm. His Holiness is ordinary as well as being extraordinary.
I see that about the Dalai Lama.
So, you know, we know that he has negative thoughts. We know that he has stomach upsets and he had cancer of the gallbladder. I mean, this is shadow aspect. But what they do in living the humanness of this is to find ways of transmuting it into sustainable joy. So they appear to radiate a light of a conviction of belief that literally I've seen strong men go to meet the Queen, and when they're in her presence, they quake.
Wow.
They are moved beyond themselves. I mean, one of the people that I had immense fortune to work with was Princess Diana for the last 2 years of her life.
What was she like?
And when you met this being...
I would like to have met her.
She was just exquisite in her love, her grace. So when she said, I am the... Well, she didn't actually say this. Other people said it of her, that she was the queen of everybody's hearts. And I think in the Bashir interview, she said, I would like to be this, not I am this. I would like to be this. So she had a dream, which she committed herself to. And, you know, she would go and visit people who were AIDS, and she would just touch them lovingly, and they would be healed.
Really? I didn't know that.
That they literally, their HIV would move into a state of balance where T-cell count would grow, or they'd move into a state of remission. Mm. I mean, extraordinary. So she had a light. Well, surely we saw that when she passed, because look how millions of people were affected. Anyway, so these are very ordinary human beings who, you know, eat and go to the bathroom and
but
do all sorts of things.
But coming into this time, in relationship to this time, will we all be anointed ones?
If we choose to be.
And how do we choose that?
Well, it is chosen for us, and then we turn up to understand what our role is, and that it's about literally living as much love as we can. It's so simple, but people don't be it or do it.
Well, talk about angel activism.
Mm. So this is the substance of angel activism, because it's all about understanding how we can become truly intelligent on a feeling level, and therefore to move into points of harmony and sovereignty. So they give us very particular skills that help us. Mm. And one of the great skills that they give us is an historic perspective of our peoples, and they allow us to see that civilizations rise and fall. And so at the moment our civilization is falling, and we have basically two choices, don't we? Because at the moment we live plurality. One is to believe that nothing is a miracle, and the other is to believe that everything is a miracle, to quote Einstein. And so as we look at the negativity in our world, what are we going to do about it? And so angelic activism is looking into, well, how can I use the body of the angels' work to understand that love, that empathy, that inclusivity, that hope are these high vibrational processes that lead us to delight, that lead us to forgiveness, that lead us to mercy, and that eventually lead us to victory and glory so that we resurrect. Mm. We die to our old selves and we are reborn to our divine blueprint, which needs constant attention.
Is this what is happening now with our political systems?
I believe so, yeah.
They're dying to their old selves and they're being reborn into possibility.
Mm.
Possibility that the sacredness of the human being will be valued. So
this is interesting, isn't it?
It's, you know, exciting.
It's the beginning of a huge debate, because when we look into the, you know, I don't want to mention names, but of course everybody knows who we're talking about, that there are certain vessels that appear to be immensely impure, and then there are certain vessels, particularly like, for me, the being that has just left the chosen elect position, who I believe was an anointed one, of being president, that we see behavior that is grace-filled. So there are choices that we can make. And I believe that we've, you know, that this is a field to our consciousness and that we're merely projecting onto it. Our life is not happening to us, it's responding to us. So how do we respond to this? A lot of people are very angry and very judgmental. I believe that what we need to do is to move away from the blame culture and to use it as an instrument to find out about insight and resolution, that this is merely a projection of my own consciousness. This is a projection of my own shadow. So how do I heal my own shadow? And I want to drop this in because I think this is, I feel this is absolutely exquisite, that these beings of light have introduced me to some extraordinary extra and ultra-terrestrial beings. And about 15 years ago, a huge life shift took place for me, and they introduced me to the Hathors, who worked with me for about 3 weeks in illuminating much of what I'm saying, so that not it becomes an idea, that it becomes an experience that I embody these processes. So they're clever ideas, but how do I embody it? And their parting shot and their parting gist.
How did you work with the Hathors, though?
They talked to me.
They came to you
in the middle of the night.
And they told you about.
Reflect on your life. Why did you make that choice? Perhaps if you made this choice, it would have been less onerous. It would have been easier. It would, you know, you wouldn't have got yourself into what I have to keep constantly measuring within myself is to worry. And so, as a great teacher, Sai Baba, said to me 45 years ago, who gave me this ring.
He manifested, you know, that ring.
He manifested the ring. He said, worry, worry, worry. What's the point of worrying when you can pray? So I turned the worry into prayer by using positive affirmation.
So the Hathors.
But their parting was, no, listen. What we want you to understand is that we've been through a very similar soulful trajectory to what you've been through, and that our lowest feeling state is something you call ecstasy.
Their lowest state.
That's their lowest feeling state. So it gives us.
So we can't even imagine what their highest feeling state is.
A marker. Samadhi, I don't know what we call it.
Samadhi? Because we haven't had that access, that experience.
I believe that somewhere deep in ourselves, that experience is, I do believe. And what we're now doing is changing the whole of our physical being, so we human beings are mutating, so that we can actually open the 44 codons of DNA, the strands of DNA in our bodies, that are dormant, that we're not using. We're just using a double strand.
How do we activate the 44 codons?
By doing this.
By doing which? What? What are we doing here?
By what we're talking about, which is to make intelligent choices and to stop hating and to stop loathing and to stop revenging and to stop depressing and to stop judging, to move into love, to move into freedom, to really balance out. If we're hurt, how do we heal the hurt? And not that person hasn't done it to me, although they seem to be a bastard, how do I heal that? So that we choose the higher choice. Our mortal beings are feeling the tragedy of the weaponry and the pain of the suffering. Our celestial beings are not feeling that in the slightest. So how can we literally turn all of that? How can we be sacred activists as human angels that just live love, but not in some absurd way of really moving into our embodiment. And this is what Archangel Michael is principally helping us with, because as we know, Archangel Michael is an immense leader who has a sword And that's the sword of truth that pierces all of this energy.
So we'd say maybe we're in the age of Michael right now with the sword of truth.
This is the dawning of the age of angels, uh-huh. Yeah. And we're all becoming angel activists. So this is a call to action. Let's stop being silly and let's measure the absolute fullness of who we truly are so that we gestate or evolve into higher beings.
Mm. Would you say the whole universe is made of, it's full of angelic presence, of life presences, different frequencies, extraterrestrials are really just frequencies that resonate on a whole different scale, would you say that?
Absolutely, I believe this is so.
Uh-huh, so
they just apropos that point, yes. They teach me that we're one of 24 civilizations living in the galaxy.
Who teaches that? The angels of Atlantis, yeah. Teach you that we're one of
24.
Living in this galaxy, mm. On 3D dimensions.
No. We're the only beings that are living 3D. The others don't have bodies. And they also say that they look on us with awe.
Because
we have bodies.
That's nice.
So they say, how did you do that? Because they don't have weight, space, or time. So they don't need to do that.
But we are in resonance with those other 23 civilizations, right?
You are.
We are.
You are.
Mia, you're not. I don't know.
Well, it's just that, you know, we are. Those of us that have a consciousness that is awakened, mm-hmm. that we know that there is something very extraordinary that is being communicated to us right now from the extraterrestrial kingdoms, absolutely, unquestionably.
Yes.
Now, on lesser vibration, we know that the Disclosure Committee is also bringing, on a lesser vibration, is bringing it to the attention of millions of people around mm-hmm. our world,
that the
nature of extraterrestrial presence on our planet has been in secret for yes. many, many years. But we're living in an age of transparency, largely as a result of the angelic order bringing us to this freedom of love, because love is completely transparent. We don't hide within love.
Mm-hmm. So the ET kingdom, the angelic kingdom, it's all about love, but different frequencies because, mm-hmm. you know, say love, we think it's all the same, but it's not all the same. It manifests in different
Well, love
forms.
Is all the same. It's yes. just its manifestation is different. Let's right. say, for example, you know, like finding our note, that the note or the love is mm-hmm. a prism mm-hmm. that refracts light. And so we know that the one prism, this little quartz prism that we hang in the window, that when the one light passes through it, it becomes many lights.
Right.
That's the point. So we are prisms for immense possibilities.
And that possibility is what, besides joy? I mean, it's, I guess, if I'm creativity, expression.
It seems at the moment, well, yeah. I say at the moment, I mean, it seems that for me over the last 25 years of people coming to me all over the world, because one of the joyous things about these amazing beings, and particularly this oracle, which I'd love to share, Carl,
yes,
with you.
Yes, let's share that. Because
this has been translated into many different languages, and so...
If you don't know Stuart's work so well, you might know his deck, Angels of Atlantis Oracle Deck, which is...
This is the first of two, by the way.
First of two. Mm. You did two, why?
Because the angels wanted to.
Okay. Can't argue with some angels.
The second one opens the right brain. This opens the left brain. What yes. many people say to me when they come into a session is, I don't know what my purpose is.
Uh-huh.
And for me, that's pretty simple.
Okay.
Because what is our purpose? Our purpose is to optimize our creativity full of love and joy. That's it.
I think you're right.
That's it.
All right. Let me pick a card.
Does it matter what...
What form it takes.
What form it takes. And then, of course, we know that one principle opens into many different principles, which is, mm-hmm. well, I can do this and this and this and this and this and this. So which one am I going to choose that is my métier?
If this came to you, would you say you're a channel?
Yes.
Okay.
A medium. But medium feels like I channel dead people.
No, you're a medium for the angelic realms.
So there are 44.
44.
So one of your strands of DNA is about to be...
Activated. Let's see which strand will. This one, I'm getting two, but.
Wonderful. So one can be for you and one can be for the conversation we're having.
Okay. The one that I just got.
Yes!
Okay.
I love it.
Divine intelligence.
I love it. So let me interpret.
Please.
So Metatron is one of the 12, mm-hmm. and Metatron is the cosmic teacher. Mm-hmm. And Metatron stands on the right-hand side of the divine, according to many of the books of wisdom, mm-hmm. and has the key to the Akashic. And so the card's attribution is divine intelligence. Isn't that fitting?
Yes.
Because actually what we're talking about are the downloads that are happening right now within us as receptors of immense information from the Akashic about where we are at in this moment of time, you and I, mm-hmm. as we contribute to all the many people that like listening to us mm-hmm. or being with us. Isn't
great.
That fascinating?
That
absolutely
is
amazing.
Great. I feel a connection to Metatron. Mm. And the second thing...
Metatron!
Again, how many Metatron cards are there?
There are four.
And I got two.
And the attribution on this card is mercy.
Mercy.
Now, this is really interesting in terms of what we were talking about. Mm. Because we were evoking, how do we become truly sovereign? Mm. How do we become the master mistresses of our own destiny? Mm. And here, we have mercy, which is an action of divine grace that can be given only by the anointed ones. Mm-hmm. In other words, if we lie, if we steal, worse still, if we murder, that we can always go to a higher order for clemency, for forgiveness, or for mercy. So mercy is God-given. Huh. And what we're talking about, I believe, is the need to produce more mercy in our lives and therefore in the world.
Mercy. I'm not sure. What does that mean?
It's a high level of forgiveness, I've just said.
So I know, but I'm trying to integrate into my everyday awareness.
So when you feel that you've committed perjury or, you know, you've been evil, mm-hmm. doubt very much that you have been because you're
I'm sure I've had some moments.
You're so charming. But well, you know, when we've got that vibration within us, where do we go with it?
So mercy is asking for a forgiveness from the divine level.
From the divine, absolutely.
Not the human.
Absolutely.
I'm not.
Well, the human being can be a representative of the divine. The anointed ones can be a representative. And so in the photograph, in the icon, rather,
yes.
you can actually see the vessel in the wretch who is going to the king. Because the king was the Lord's anointed on earth.
Mm.
This is all now changing, you see. We're not appointing a king or a queen as the anointed one. We're learning that we all have the potential to become anointed ones.
Mm. Let me see the rest of this stuff. I bet they're all great. I mean,
they're very beautiful.
Benediction and hope and friendship, compassion.
Now, Safkiel's interesting. Safkiel's the angel of sacred love, who is teaching us all about ecstasy and passion. And there's, of course, compassion, which is St. Francis.
So the 12 angels of Atlantis are represented four cards each on there? No.
That would make 48, and there are 44. So there's a little bit of math that's involved.
I see. And you have Michael as Thoth, transmutation.
Yes.
So you teach people how to read these, but they're also tapping into those angelic
well,
vibrations.
The point is that, you know, let's say, for example, we've experienced stress or a problem and we can't make a choice. If we live here, we can never make a choice because this is always saying, shall I, shan't I, will I, won't I? Mm-hmm. So we've learned that in this challenge, I'm going to come into my heart because my heart will always know what to do because my heart is the seat of the soul. So let me actually reach out and ask for the angels to help me. So we go through the oracle and we choose one particular card that illuminates the conviction of what we need to do about the challenge. In that moment, that angel comes to help us. But it's we that make the change, not the angel.
Mm-hmm.
Now, sometimes we know that the angels can come in and there's divine intervention. Sometimes.
Right.
But their vibration is not to, they don't have free will. They serve us.
Right. So when we pick a card, we're calling in that vibration to serve us in a higher function to awaken a greater reality.
Yeah. Because, you know, for example, you're having a problem and you're feeling really dismal and forlorn and you choose Gabriel, the great messenger, and the card is benediction. So what does benediction mean? Blessing.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, in this terrible state of depression, Gabriel is coming in and saying, but don't you see we're blessing you?
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, the depression is elevated into a state of, oh my God, I was feeling totally alone. Now I realize that this is merely a trajectory that I'm using to grow into the possibility that there is another truth. which is not my forlornness and my depression, but actually this is teaching me I never need to be here again. And Gabriel comes in and says, I will always be with you.
Yeah, I have a cat named Gabriel, actually.
Ah.
But anyway, as you're talking, though, I'm getting the sense that the characteristics of the angelic realm are available to us to vibrate at the divine level. We can say it's divine, but it's the angelic realms that give us the qualities of the divine that we could achieve on a personality level of mercy, benediction, grace, compassion. And this is the task of the human being, is to awaken the divine traits so we can then enact that in the world and bring the compassion and love to the world that's needed at this time.
That's beautiful. What a synopsis.
Well, thank you, Stuart, for letting us enjoy that.
I'd love to drop in just one
please.
More thought.
Yes, tell us. Yes.
Which is that our guardian angel is always with us, and that the guardian angel in Rome was called the genie.
The genie.
Which gives us genius. Oh. So Michelangelo didn't believe that he painted the Sistine Chapel. He believed that he was merely a vessel through which the divine light poured, and his genie gave him the genius. I believe it's the same with most great artists. They don't believe that they did it. They are shaman, that they move into a shamanic state. So our guardians are always with us. Thank you so much for this conversation.
Thank you.
I've had such fun.
But let me just ask you, guardians, angels, and the genie, are they one and the same, or is they
all? Our guardian angel is the genie. In Rome, the guardian angel was called a genie. We call it guardian angel, they called it a genie. In Greece, they were known as demons.
Daemons.
Which
Daemon.
We but that's a ligature. It's a classical ligature, which is E in our pronunciation.
But it was a good thing, the daemons.
I know, we've demonized them.
Socrates had his daemon.
Exactly.
And he
but
would
actually,
listen
it was
to that.
In classical speech in the 19th century and the early 20th, it was demon, as in Aesop, not daemon or daemon or anything.
It's just
that we played around with, because we're very clever with our minds.
But everyone, though, has access to their genie, their
of
genius.
Course. That's why I wanted to drop it in.
Well, thank you. But it's like, but we're not listening to it. So how do we listen to our, because you're saying the guardian angel is full of creative potential then, but we're not always, although I hope, I mean, I work on being connected to that as much as I can. So let's see if the world can always be connected to that.
I feel all we need to do is keep speaking, Alan.
Speaking from the note.
Yes.
From our center.
All we need to do is keep talking in this way, because we know that the heart has an energy field 5,000 times greater than the human brain. So all of these sounds and intentions and loves that we've sent forth today, all we need to do is to keep being and doing this, and then the world will change.
Thank you. And thank you for this conversation and your work in the world to be a vehicle of angelic communication.
Yes, and what I'm asking everybody to do, those who can, is this is a call to action. Let's all become angelic activists.
And how do we do that?
By tuning into this work.
But which work in particular?
The work of the Angels of Atlantis.
Well,
www.stuartpearce.com or www.theangelsofatlantis.com. And, you know, my YouTube presence. Now, I don't want to give a sense of narcissism about
it. No, no, no.
It's actually the fact that we're tuning into all of the work that you're doing with extraterrestrials, all of the work that all the people on our planet are doing in relation to the angelic kingdom. This is just this humble man giving an offering.
Yeah, it's not about you. You are the vehicle, the messenger of the delivery. And if we can benefit, if you can benefit, if all of us can benefit, great, why not?
Let's keep talking.
We'll keep talking this conversation. Stuart Pearce, Angels of Atlantis. This is his Oracle deck, which is a beautiful deck, beautiful design deck. You have two decks. Are they called one and two?
No, you see, obviously, I'm really into the representations.
Yes.
Because how do you allow today people to understand what orb vibration is all about? So
right.
I've tried to actually use images that are very grounded to depict or illustrate the energy of the angel. The second oracle, they've given us their hearts. The angels have given us their hearts. And they've given them to us in sigil form. A sigil is a geometry that holds the essence of an entity. So they've given me these geometries, and I therefore designed, with the help of a graphics person, these extraordinary images that where one can feel the heart of the angel touching one's own heart.
Nice.
So literally, people hold the card to their breasts and feel an immense radiation coming
Great.
Through.
Great, how exciting. Yeah.
And there are many recordings, because obviously this is all about sound that I've made as well.
Thank you, Stuart. Thank you,
Bless you.
For
Namaste.
Your work, for your dedication of your life to this work, because you are then bringing the planet to this vibration. So we all appreciate that.
Thank you.
I've been talking to Stuart Pierce, the vehicle for the angels of Atlantis in many, many ways. If you want to reach him, go to stuartpierce.com. If you want to reach him, go to New Reality.